On June 28, 1970, the first gay liberation day march is held in New York City, and the first gay freedom day march is held in Los Angeles. The Gay Liberation Front and Gay Activist Alliance in the early post-Stonewall era coordinated the first rally to commemorate the anniversary of the Stonewall riots. While organizing the liberation day marches, Brenda Howard had the idea for a week-long series of events around what is now known as Pride Day. Woo! Way to go, Brenda. This became the first of the extended annual LGBT Pride celebrations that are held around the world. That same year, the U.S. Libertarian Party called for the repeal of all victimless crime laws, including laws prohibiting sodomy. In 1971, Dr. Frank Kameny becomes the first openly gay candidate for the United States Congress. Kameny had been a victim of the Lavender Scare that took place in the United States during the 50s and early 60s. He is credited with bringing an aggressive new tone to the gay civil rights struggle. Following that election, Dr. Kameny and his campaign organization created the Gay and Lesbian Alliance of Washington, D.C., an organization which continues to lobby government and press for case. Continues to lobby government and press for the case of equal rights. In 1972, the Claim Hunters Community Cable Channel in Toronto airs Coming Out, Canada's first television series about LGBT issues. And by judging by the time for 1972, I would think that is probably the first LGBT show in history, not just in Canada. But I could be wrong. If you know, give us a call, 494-2487. We are looking for community phone-ins this week. I never really think that. So there you go. That same year, Sweden becomes the first country in the world to allow transsexuals to legally change their sex and provide free hormone therapy. Also in 1972, East Lansing and Ann Arbor, Michigan and San Francisco, California become the first cities in the United States to pass a homosexual rights ordinance. Jim Foster from San Francisco and Madeline Davis from Buffalo, New York become the first gay and lesbian delegates to the Democratic Convention. The University of Buffalo offers Lesbianism 101, the first course of its kind, taught by Margaret Small and Madeline Davis. When the course was offered a second time, Madeline renamed and taught the course Women Plus Women in 1978. The final project interview tapes for this course were used as a basis for the Buffalo Women's Oral History Project, co-founded with Dr. Elizabeth Lepofsky Kennedy in 1978. The project sought to document the lives of older lesbians, and in 1981, they won an Astraria Foundation grant to pursue their work. After more than a decade of research, Davis co-authored and published with Kennedy Boots of Leather, Slippers of Gold, The History of the Lesbian Community. Check it out. It's probably a good book. I haven't read it, but it's definitely on my list. Winner of the Lambda Literary Award for Women's Nonfiction, the Ruth Benedict Award for Urban Anthropology, and the Jesse Bernard Award from the American Sociological Association. She's also published numerous journal and magazine articles on sexuality and women's history, as well as short stories and poetry. Davis has lectured on women's history and sex and gender issues at a number of universities. Madeline Davis is also a musician, and she is responsible for writing the Stonewall Nation, which is credited as the first gay anthem. So I tried to download that to play in the background. Couldn't find it. So maybe you might just have to buy it. I don't know. 1973, the Canadian Gay Liberation Movement Archives is launched. This is a library of sorts that collect materials related to the history of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender communities in Canada. I believe it can be found somewhere in Ontario. I want to say Toronto, but I could be wrong. Most of my sources are Wikipedia, so hop on Wikipedia, look up Canadian Gay Liberation Movement Archives, find out where it is, go take a visit. Knowing our history is always a good idea. It's easier not to repeat it that way. So also in 1973, the American Psychiatric Association removes homosexuality from its diagnostic and statistical manual of mental disorders, based largely on the research and advocacy of Evelyn Hooker. Basically, this guy, Glenn Smith, Annie Bartlett, and Michael Caine, they all got together and decided that they were going to interview former patients that were treated for homosexuality after the 1950s. So there's 29 people who received treatments to change their sexual orientation in the United Kingdom, and 2 relatives of former patients. So they interviewed 31 people. Here's the conclusion: the definition of same-sex attraction as an illness and the development of treatments to eradicate sex attraction have had a negative long-term impact on individuals. Let's see. I'll just read some of the quotes from here. Right before treatment, many participants felt they lacked parental affection during childhood and adolescence. Experiencing same-sex attraction gave rise to considerable anxiety. There were no positive role models, and the newspapers were full of the most vituperative filth that made me feel suicidal. I felt totally bewildered, and my entire emotional life was being written up in the papers as utter filth and perversity. Those who confided in others were usually met with silence, condemnation, and rejection, or told that their homosexual feelings constituted a temporary phase. Two of them who confided in their teachers were referred to psychiatrists for treatment. Although many had experimented with same-sex partners, the legal and social risks involved were considerable. Isolation from other gay young people also drove several as young adolescents to engage in sexual experimentation with adults, and vice versa. That might not otherwise have occurred. Growing up and realizing that their sexual feelings were not a passing phase increased their sense of shame and isolation. A few requested help directly from mental health professionals to change their sexual orientation. Most, however, talked about their homosexual feelings with their general practitioners. However, doctors often lacked knowledge and were uncomfortable with the disclosure of homosexual feelings. Treatments. The age at which people receive treatment ranged from 13 to 40 years, with most being in their late adolescence and early 20s. Treatments described were mainly administered in NHS hospitals throughout Britain, and in one case, a military hospital. Those treated privately usually underwent psychoanalysis. The most common treatment from the early 1960s to early 1970s was behavioral aversion therapy with electric shocks. There was 11 participants, I guess, out of the 31 people that they interviewed. Nausea induced by apomorphine as the aversive stimulus was reported less often. There was 4 participants in that. In electric shock aversion therapy, electrodes were attached to the wrist or lower leg, and shocks were administered while the patient watched photographs of men and women in various stages of an undress. The aim was to encourage avoidance of the shock by moving to photographs of the opposite sex. It was hoped that arousal to same-sex photographs would reduce, while relief arising from shock avoidance would increase interest in opposite sex images. Some patients reported undergoing detailed examination before treatment, while others were assessed more perfunctorily. That's a fun word. Patients would recline on a bed or sit in a chair in a dark room, either alone or with a professional behind a screen. Each treatment lasted about 30 minutes, with some participants given portable electric shock boxes used at home while they induced sexual fantasies. Wow. Patients receiving apomorphine were often admitted to the hospital due to side effects of nausea and dehydration and the need for repeated doses, while those receiving electric shock aversion therapy attended as outpatients for weeks or in some cases up to 2 years. Wow, that's intense. Have you guys ever seen one flew over the cuckoo's nest? I guess that's what they used to do to gay people. Isn't that sad? But now we don't have to worry about feeling bad about ourselves. Yay! Okay, so on January 5th, 1974, Adrian Potts, Pat Murphy, Sue Wells, and Heather Elizabeth performed the song at Amateur Night at the Brunswick Tavern. Their chosen song, I Enjoy Being a Dyke, a parody of I Enjoy Being a Girl, a song by Rodgers and Hammerstein, drew the attention of the bar's owner. The four were asked by the owner to leave the premises. They refused to leave and were arrested. The lesbians alleged verbal and physical police harassment as a result of the incident. Gay historian Tom Warner believes that the arrest and its consequences was a key incident ushering in a more militant gay and lesbian liberation movement in Canada, much as the Stonewall Inn riots politicized gays and lesbians in the United States. Warner also notes that this was one of the first occasions that a gay or lesbian topic received extensive press coverage in Canada. Later in 1974, Taffy Kozachenko will become the first openly gay American elected to public office, which she wins a seat on the Ann Arbor, Michigan City Council. And Robert Grant founds American Christian Cause to oppose the gay agenda. It is the beginning of modern Christian politics in America. Don't be excited about that, folks. 1975, Elaine Noble becomes the second openly homosexual American elected to public office when she wins a seat in the Massachusetts State House. October 1976, the Lesbian Organization of Toronto was formed. Robert Grant founds the Christian Voice to take his anti-homosexual rights crusade national in the United States. I think I tried finding this on the internet, the Christian Voice, and I couldn't really come up with too much. I did find out that Robert Grant has been a syndicated radio host on and off for quite some time. He's also published magazines and whatnot, and founded many Christian right groups. He was involved with Jerry Falwell in the 1970s. So, yeah, there you go. In 1977, Dade County, Florida enacted a human rights ordinance that prohibited discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. It was repealed the same year after a militant anti-homosexual rights campaign led by Anita Bryant. Thank you, Madam Bryant. Quebec becomes the first jurisdiction larger than a city to prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation in the public and private sectors. Okay. In 1978, the rainbow flag is first used as a symbol of gay pride. Buddies in Bad Times, Canada's oldest surviving theatre company dedicated to LGBT theatre, is launched by Matt Walsh, Jerry Sicoridi, and Sky Gilbert. SEMWA, the earliest known lesbian feminist BDSM organization, is founded in San Francisco. Well-known members of the group include Pat Calicia and Gail Rubin. The group is among the very earliest advocates of what came to be known as sex-positive feminism. May 10th, 1979, in the British Columbia provincial elections, Robert Douglas Cook becomes Canada's first openly gay political candidate. He garnered 126 votes in West Vancouver House Down as a candidate of the Gay Alliance Toward Equality. The first National Homosexual Rights March in Washington, D.C. is held. Harry Hay issues the first call for a radical fairy gathering in Arizona. In relation to the first National Homosexual Rights March in Washington, D.C., if you find this way out on the internet, they actually have some archival footage, and there's an audio documentary on there. If you can hit that and check that out, a little bit more of interest. In 1980, the Democratic National Convention becomes the first major political party in America to endorse a homosexual rights platform plank. David McReynolds becomes the first openly LGBT individual to run for President of the United States, appearing on the Socialist Party USA ticket. The Human Rights Campaign Fund, founded by Steve Endian, an advocate for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender equality. I'm not really sure what that means. Anyway, February 5th, 1981, four bathhouses in Toronto are raided. The 1981 Toronto bathhouse raids are now considered one of the crucial turning points of Canadian LGBT history, as an unprecedented community mobilization took place to protest police conduct. One of the protest marches during this mobilization is now generally recognized as the first Toronto Pride event. Oh, that's cool. So check that out, 1981. There you go. 1982, the first gay games is held in San Francisco, attracting 1,600 participants. April 20th, 1983, the Backdoor Gym, one of the establishments raided in 1981, is raided again. This raid is protested on April 23rd. No further bathhouse raids take place in the 1980s. The warrant used in this raid was declared invalid by the courts on October 3rd, 1984. Later on that year, Massachusetts Representative Jerry Studs reveals he is a homosexual on the floor of the House, becoming the first openly homosexual member of Congress, and is re-elected the following year. So March 1984, Pink Triangle Press, the publisher of Body Politic, launches the local LGBT newspaper Extra in Toronto, Berkeley, in Toronto, and then in Berkeley, California, they become the first city in the U.S. to adopt a program of domestic partnership health benefits for city employees. In 1985, the first memorial to gay Holocaust victims is dedicated. In June 1986, Bowers v. Hardwick, a case in the U.S. Supreme Court, upholds Georgia law forbidding oral or anal sex, ruling that the constitutional right to privacy does not extend to homosexual relations, but it did not state whether the law could be enforced against heterosexuals. I wonder if that law is still in effect. 1987, Pink Triangle Press ceases publication of Body Politic. ACT UP stages its first major demonstration. 17 protesters are arrested. U.S. Congressman Barney Frank comes out. Homo Monument, a memorial to persecuted homosexuals, opens in Amsterdam. And CODCO, a sketch comedy series whose cast includes the openly gay Greg Malone and Tommy Sexton, debuts on CBC television. Along with the latter, The Kids in the Hall, the show plays a prominent role in the representation of LGBT characters and issues on Canadian television. In addition to the gay characters Jerome and Duncan, Sexton and Malone were especially renowned for drag-based impersonations of celebrity women such as Queen Elizabeth, Barbara Frum, Barbara Walters, Tammy Faye Baker, and Margaret Thatcher. That's awesome, Tammy Faye Baker. I gotta find that on YouTube for sure. 1988, Canadian MP Sven Robinson comes out. Canada lowers the age of consent for sodomy to 18. The Kids in the Hall, a sketch comedy series whose cast includes the openly gay Scott Thompson, debuts on CBC television. Oh, that's weird. Sketches such as Thompson's character Buddy Cole and the ensemble sketch The Steps were among the most visible representations of gay culture on Canada television during the show's run. And in 1989, Denmark is the first country in the world to enact registered partnership laws for same-sex couples with most of the same rights as marriage, although excluding the right to adoption and the right to marriage in a church. So thanks for listening to this episode of We've Come a Long Way, Baby. There will be more to come Thursday and Friday. So keep tuning in all week long.